Bob and I are going to try and share 15 minutes, so I'm going to go through this pretty quick. And, you know, we hopefully will have some time for questions afterwards, but I timed myself 7 minutes this morning, and I think it's going to work out. Okay, so what makes sense for tool development for an ELO-like group? I mean, ELO-like in a couple of ways. I'm checking my watch. All right. ELO-like in a couple of ways. One way is interest in electronic literature. The other one is just the sort of profile of our organization, right? How big we are, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so one thing is, you know, keep in mind appropriate scale and goals for who we are, and the other is be specific to our community, right? What do I mean in particular? So appropriate scale and goals, not beyond our resources, not competing for users with large entities, commercial or open source, not trying to talk people out of using their current tools, but providing something else that their current tools don't provide. By being specific to our community, I mean in areas where tools exist, we should concentrate on how those tools can work for our constituents. In terms of new development, we should do what other people won't do. What do I mean by those? Well, where tools exist, we should test widely and contribute narrowly. Where tools exist, we should have a preference for free and open tools, and we need to bear in mind that what's needed may not be technical. What do I mean by those? Test widely, contribute narrowly means, okay, so what Nick was talking about, there are current emulators, which of them can help the works that we want to have be readable get out to the people that we want to have read them? And are there projects that we should contribute to and improve that are already out there for making the kinds of works that we want people to read readable in the ways we want them to read them, right? So that's what I mean by test widely, contribute narrowly. Preference for open and free tools. So I mean open like open source and free as in free beer, right? Okay, people are familiar with these terms, right? So if both kinds of things work or both mean the same kind of level of contribution and we have a choice between a commercial tool and an open and free tool, we should give that preference to the open and free tool. Do people know what TidyLib is? Okay, have people heard of HTML Tiny? Which is another name for this. There's my pointer. Okay, well let me very quickly open this up. This actually is in with the phone, I guess. That's not within my time. Oh, right, because I didn't do this. Excitement runs high.
How many people write valid HTML?
Well, more people than have Xenoscript.
All right. Well, we're going to give this a moment to see if it can find itself, and I'm going to give the spiel I would have given while it was open. So HTML Tidy is a relatively large open source project for saying people wrote a bunch of really bad HTML or really specific to the browser HTML back when Netscape 1.1 was new or whatever. What are we going to do with that stuff? Especially since the tools we're working on now are meant for working with much more modern types of HTML. Well, why don't we try to do some automatic conversion, at least as a first pass? So this is an open and free project that tries to do that. And what we can do as an organization like the ELO is say, okay, let's try taking some of our particularly squirrely works that were done when, you know, HTML2 had that cool new frames thing, or that was 1.1, what was new in 2? Let's say back when, you know, server push was the way you did animation, right? Let's try lots of weird things and say, okay, how far does something like HTML Tidy get us? How much hand tweaking do we have to do next in order to make it really work the way we want it to be readable for people, right? Because sometimes emulation gets you where you want to be, but sometimes what you want to do is just reach a lot of readers, not all of whom are going to want to be willing to install emulators. How do we make this serve the needs of our community? And what can we contribute that's specific to what our community needs? Okay, so that's what I mean by that. Now, also we have to bear in mind that when tools exist, what's needed may not be technical. A tool may exist, it might just be too expensive, and maybe there's a piece of organizational engineering rather than technical engineering to give our constituents access to it, right? So having it at a central ELO office or something like that. A tool may exist, and it may simply be too difficult to use, and then there could be organizational or technical solutions to that. So we could organizationally engineer assistance with using the tools, or we could technically engineer an improved interface. I'm doing great on that. Alright, so here's my segue. What if no tools exist, right? Well, we should do what others won't do, even if we cajole them, right? And offer to help, et cetera, right? You know, we should try all the other stuff first, but maybe that do I mean by these things? All right, so what are things that others won't do? I don't think others are going to do e-literature tools beyond reading and writing. And I don't think people are going to do projects that, from our point of view, are high risk and high gain, or potentially high gain, you know, it's the nature of being high risk. Okay, so when I say e-lit beyond reading and writing, I mean tools for scholarship and education, some of the sorts of threads that have been running through, you know, our entire gathering, tools for preservation and archiving. And I think we should still continue to try and build on the work of others, right? So when I say build on the work of others, partially I mean there are all these great XML specs out there. And if we were going to try and figure out some of the ways of, like, representing scalar vector graphics, we might decide to use, you know, the XML standard of that name. But also I mean building on the work of others in terms of, I don't think in any case we want to write our own widget library and write our own GUI and then write our own text editor and then keep all those elements up as there's every rev of every operating system we want to run on. We should build on somebody else's effort in these areas. Now, I bet there are people who haven't heard of Eclipse, right? Okay, so I'm going to click again, and yeah, it'll do great. Don't worry. So here's Eclipse. Eclipse is a tool for building tools, or it's a platform for building tools. I know people who use Eclipse primarily as their development environment.
Click again.
It has no regard for me.
Paperclip will come up in a moment.
Oh, with lots of copies of Eclipse. Mm-hmm. All right, here's an exciting copy of Eclipse. Yeah. So it's a platform for building tools, and a lot of people use it as a development environment, so it's used to language, people wanting to look at language that also functions and does something. It has basic XML interpretation functions built into it. It accepts plugins, right? It's not necessarily the thing we would want to build on top of. The people who are actually in charge of building it should make the decision of what to build on top of. I'm just giving this as an example of the fact that there are things out there, and people not only ship free and open tools based on this, but then people also create proprietary plugins and sell those plugins, and that's a business model that's pursued by people like IBM, right? So somebody like IBM is willing to have their developer tools rest on this foundation. I think we should be willing to have our scholarly tools rest on this foundation. I think that there's a lot of contributors to it. It's a robust kind of thing. And there are other things out there. This turns out not to be the right solution. I just think it's the right kind of solution. All right, now I'm concluding. I'm concluding as soon as I get back down to where I was in the slide. This is the beginning of my adventure in PowerPoint as well this semester, so...
it's a hot new tool for electronic literature.
That's right. It sort of existed too long, right?
And there is fiction that has been written in PowerPoint format, just in case anybody was wondering.
Okay. We have to do this. No one else is going to do this. And if it doesn't happen, then the people in this room who care about electronic literature are going to spend a lot of time doing things by hand that, you know, could be done more efficiently, and other people who might get interested in being in a room like this in the future will find the barrier to entry is too high. I think this is the kind of thing for which the ELO should exist. Something else that people won't do is high-risk, high-gain projects. So an example of a high-risk, high-gain project would be an ELIT creation tool. What if we could support a tool that tried to enable a new genre each year, right? And this is a sort of pie-in-the-sky goal, but it's not entirely pie-in-the-sky. I think we should still build on the work of others, either extending, you know, existing commercial tools or make research tools usable. This was a revised slide that said opening commercial tools at one point. So we should still build on the work of others. What do I mean by that? So one of the projects that people have been talking about a lot this year, because it's supposed to be released this summer, is the Facade Project. It's an interactive drama project. It comes from a couple people who have very successful track records, right? Michael Matias, who built Terminal Time, and Andrew Stern, who worked on Dogs, Cats, and Babies. We've seen their stuff work before. We think that what they're going to come out with this summer is going to be a very exciting one-off project. And then... who knows, right? There may never be another project in that genre unless somebody steps forward and says, hey, you know, we'd be interested in maybe looking at this infrastructure you've built and seeing if there's a way over the course of a year with a little bit of support for it to be made available to a wider group of authors who haven't created all the infrastructure themselves, right? There are research projects like that. There are also, you know, there are also attempts to build on other authoring tools, which you're going to hear about, like a good example of from Rob and John in just a moment. But we're saying, what if we can take this existing tool and we can allow it to create a new paradigm of sort of stuff, right? And they're trying to do this without support, and they can go further with, right? We don't have to do this, right? This is like, it's not like, you know, we're all going to be banging our heads against the wall if we don't discover a new genre or take a high-risk shot at discovering a new genre every year. But it'd be really cool. I mean, really cool, right? And it'd be cool for us as people who study it, as people who write it, and it would be cool for the outside world, right? The ELO would be making a mark in a way that is not quite as visible to the public when we do something cool or allowing us to teach electronic literature more visibly or more easily. These sorts of things would probably be structured as sub-grants, maybe even competed for sub-grants. So, you know, there's a call for proposals, and people who would propose something exciting and we think it really can be built, that's the